This program was first broadcast on Canterbury's community access radio station Plains FM 96.9 and was made with the assistance of New Zealand On Air.
They used to be regular guests in our homes anytime we chose, entertaining us when we switched on our radio and television sets. Now it's time to hear again the voices that came out of the glow. How's it all going? Well, Steve Price and myself, Paul F., do hope so. Just a few weeks off Christmas now, and I suppose some of us have started some sort of preparation. An extremely popular British comedian to begin today, and I have to say a top liner in terms of record sales, Sandy Powell. He was a boy soprano originally, whose catchphrase, "Can you hear me, Mother?" started out as an ad lib when he dropped his script during a broadcast. I think that's a fairly well-known fact now. He's heard today in one of his best-known recordings, "How Ashamed I Was." It's played for a leading Sandy Powell buff, Les McPherson, these days of Ashburton. I hope you're keeping well at present, Les.
Somewhere out in France I met a girl one day. I was so ashamed because she looked my way. She said, "Don't be shy," and when I saw her charms, found that I was answering the call to arms. I looked her in the eye, how ashamed I was. I looked her in the eye, how ashamed I was. I looked her in the eye, but all she did was sigh. Oh, God, blimey, how ashamed I was. I touched her on the hand, how ashamed I was. I touched her on the hand, how ashamed I was. I touched her on the hand, she whispered, "Ain't it grand?" Oh, God, blimey, how ashamed I was. I felt her pretty chin, how ashamed I was. I felt her pretty chin, how ashamed I was. I felt her pretty chin, cried, "Meredith, we're in." Oh, God, blimey, how ashamed I was. I started in to pet, how ashamed I was. I started in to pet, how ashamed I was. She said, "Now that will do, we're rushing, so are you." Oh, God, blimey, how ashamed I was. I took her for a walk, how ashamed I was. I tried to make her talk, how ashamed I was. I whispered, "Parlez-vous," she said, "Yes, but not with you." Oh, God, blimey, how ashamed I was.
For Les McPherson, a figure now well known about Ashburton. From Sandy Powell, "How Ashamed I Was." There'll be some more from Sandy in a week. We join an audience at the Grand Ole Opry now to hear Jim Reeves, "Softly and Tenderly." afternoon to Ted Moore, sitting near his radio set at home in Rangiora, and to fellow country music enthusiasts, the McNaughtons, Brian and Grace at Brightstone Crescent.
Now we'd like to settle things down just a bit and sing one of our favorite sacred songs. Tonight I've chosen one that's long been a favorite of mine, and I hope it's one of your favorites. Softly and Tenderly. Softly and tenderly, Jesus is calling, calling for you and for me. See, on the portal he's watching and waiting, waiting for you and for me. Come home, come home. Ye who are weary, come home.
To go from Jim Reeves on the Grand Ole Opry, and before that, Softly and Tenderly. You have Out of the Glow from Plains FM 96.9, Christchurch, New Zealand. Our concert goer, Chris McCabe, is here soon to talk about Pam Ayres.
Vignettes of life. Stories of people and the way they live. We present Duty. The scene is the office of a small country jail. A girl is pleading with the jailkeeper.
Listen, a little country jail like this isn't hard to get out of. You could say he escaped.
I'm sorry. He won't escape from this jail while I'm in charge of it.
I'm desperate. You've got to give him a chance. I love him.
I'm sorry for you, miss. That man committed a particularly vicious crime, robbery with violence, unnecessary violence. I arrested him and put him in the cell.
And today they'll arrive to take him back to town.
This afternoon.
Will they send him to...
He'll get a long sentence. It was a brutal crime.
Oh, please. Bobby's only a boy. And I do love him. If he was your son...
I still have my duty.
If he were your son, you'd give him a chance. That's why I want you to give Bobby a chance. After all, he's somebody's son. Oh, please give him a chance. Just one chance. Forget your duty just this time. Show him some mercy.
I'm sorry.
If you do, he'll never go wrong again.
You're wrong, miss. Let me tell you a story. You mentioned my son. I did have a son once, and he went wrong.
You must have shown him some mercy.
I did. I was on the city detective force at the time, and my son went wrong. I didn't do my duty and send him to jail. I shielded him, and I paid for it.
How?
My son went from bad to worse. He killed his mother. She died from a broken heart, and he ruined my career and my life. I disowned him.
I'm sorry for that, but if you give Bobby a chance...
I gave my son a chance. I let him loose on society. Morally, I was responsible for every crime he committed after that.
And because you gave your son a chance and suffered for it, you're going to be hard on Bobby. You're going to send him up.
I can't make the same mistake twice. I resigned from the city force. I was given this jail to look after. This friend of yours...
Oh, he's more than a friend. Oh, can't you see I love him?
I can't take that into account. I have my duty. I recognized him. I arrested him. I put him in that cell. And there he stays till the city men are out to take him.
That's what you think. Put up your hand.
Oh, Bobby. Bobby, you're out.
Yes, I'm out. Don't keep me in jail for long. Now, you. We're going to tie you up.
I'm afraid not.
Either that or be plugged. Put me in your little sardine can of a cell, would you? Keep me till the city police arrive, eh?
I still intend to do so. Give me that gun.
Yeah? Keep back.
I think I know my duty. Give me that gun.
Now, keep back or I fire. I'm giving you a chance. If you don't keep back... Oh.
Give him a chance. He wouldn't give you one, the old... I'd like to see you let him have it.
Yeah, he'll get it too. For the last time, keep back.
I want that gun.
You asked for it.
I'm not badly hurt, but you still won't get out of this jail.
I know. Who'll stop me?
I will. I've got my hand on this now.
Oh, look out! There's a gun in his pocket. Oh, give me that!
He missed me that time, thanks to you.
Oh, Bobby! Oh, please, Bobby!
I didn't miss. He's dead.
You killed him. You wouldn't give him a chance. You killed him. You killed Bobby. And I loved him.
I told you. My duty.
If Bobby had been your son...
Don't you understand, my dear? It's years, but we recognized each other. Your Bobby was my son, and I gave him a chance once.
Another vignette of life in a week. Remember the American series screened in the afternoons, Knot's Landing? This was the theme.
Thank you.
music that went with TV's Knots Landing. It's Stephen Paul, and here's another episode of our present serial.
Please, put your arms around me. Kiss me.
What?
Kiss me.
That's how it began. A foggy night, a lurking peril, and a lovely girl who was too young to die. Oh, I'm glad we had the picnic anyway, Jan.
So am I. It'll be something to take with me.
Something for me to keep. Until we meet again.
You really want me to go and see Charlie Tinker?
Sure. There's no point in waiting now, is there? He has everything arranged, the plane, the pilot. He told us that.
Yes.
We had a pretty good going away party for you this afternoon.
So we did. Okay, Mike, when?
In the morning. We'll go and see Charlie and he can take over from there.
He didn't tell us where the plane is or who the pilot is either.
Well, Charlie's too cute for that. If I know him, he'll simply give you an address and the name of a man to ask for.
Will you come too?
Well, it depends on Charlie. He probably won't want me in it, cagey as he is. You still have that £1,000, I hope.
Of course.
Well, hang on to it. You've no hope of getting out of England without it.
Mike, what about Eve?
What about it?
She must be very well off. She can just write off £1,000 like that.
Oh, she is. She was rich when I met her. She won't miss the money.
If she's that wealthy, you probably could have got more out of her.
What?
I mean, a lot of men would have.
Well, I'm not a lot of men. And if you must know, the fact that Eve has money and I don't hasn't helped our marriage at all.
No, I suppose it wouldn't. Mike,
mm-hmm.
Have you thought... I mean, have you ever wondered how we'd live if we got married?
No. It's too far ahead. All I've been thinking about is your safety getting you out of England, where Blaney's crowd and the police can't get at you for that smuggling business.
You said you'd follow me to Europe later.
Well, of course, that's the way we planned it.
After I've paid Charlie and the pilot, I only have about £400 left out of this £1,000, and we've already had to spend some of that.
Well, don't worry. Before that goes, I'll find a way of getting some more money. I'll bring it to you personally.
I was just thinking, you seem so hostile about Eve having money. Would you object to my working?
No, I guess not. If you wanted to. But what at? Modeling? Show business?
I don't know. There are other ways of making money. Sometimes you can get it very quickly, if you know how.
Yeah, the only quick ways I know of making money are crooked. You wouldn't want to be mixed up in anything like that. Hey, what is this?
What?
Well, say something. When I said you wouldn't want to be mixed up in anything crooked, you just looked at me.
You wouldn't like that, would you?
Well, of course I wouldn't.
Then I couldn't possibly be mixed up in anything crooked, could I?
What the... Then why did
you... Mike, I love you. You're important to me. And what you want is important to me. That's all there is to it.
But I want to know...
Are you afraid again, Mike? Are you afraid of what I really am? Afraid to love me as I am?
No, of course not.
Then prove it. Stop having doubts about me.
Okay, let's forget it. Let's talk about where you'll go to on the continent.
Hello, Mike.
Oh, hi, Charlie. Not hiding today.
No need to. I saw you through the window. Hello, miss.
Hello, Charlie.
What now, Mike?
Well...
Here. Do you know who was here about you?
Oh, no, not again.
Again? Again what? Oh, you mean that fellow Blaney. Oh, no, it wasn't him. I heard he's kind of horse de combat, as you might say.
Blaney's dead. Who was here?
You don't say. Dead, eh?
Isn't that what you heard?
Yes, it is. But I was surprised you know so much about it.
Look, I know he's dead. That isn't much to know.
Perhaps not. What was I going to tell you? Oh, yes. Inspector Charlton, it was.
Charlton? He came to see you?
Mike, maybe he knows...
Whatever he knows. He didn't get nothing out of me.
Good. Take it easy, Jan. It's all right.
But what would make him come to see Charlie?
He can't know about the plane.
Oh, there you go again. No discretion, Mike. That's your trouble.
Never mind about discretion, Charlie. This is it. That's what we're here for.
You're all set, then?
All set. And you?
You got the money?
Jan has it.
You got it with you now, miss?
Yes. Here it is. It's in my...
No, I don't want to see it. Not yet. You can rest a while in my back room while I make a phone call.
All right.
And you, Mike, you'd better go.
Charlie,
I'd
like to know...
You aren't going to know nothing, Mike. It's safer that way. And just quietly. I don't trust you.
Don't trust me?
Don't take offence. Now, I don't mean it that way. I mean, you're too much inclined to go off half-cocked. You're I don't mean to be rude, but you are an amateur, if you know what I mean.
Okay. But, Charlie, remember this. If anything happens to Jan, you know who I've come looking for, don't you?
I know. And I seem to recall you still have your pistol out of pawn, so I'll be careful about everything. You can be sure of that.
Well, just so you understand the way things are.
I do. Now, say your goodbyes and buzz off. No time for procrastination.
Okay. Hold it right there, chum.
That's a very bad habit of yours, Mr. Chester.
Charlton. What the devil are you doing here?
A very bad habit, threatening a policeman. This would make the third time, wouldn't it?
You were following me all the way from my place down here to the pier. You could have been anyone.
Well, I wasn't anyone. I was Detective Inspector Charlton, and I still am. Now, be a good chap and put that pistol away. Or I might have to ask you whether you have a license.
Well, go ahead and ask. I do have a license.
Yeah, put it away just the same.
Okay. Now, suppose you tell me what you're doing, following me about.
That's not entirely true. I was calling at your flat to see you, and I noticed you walking off down the street, so I simply did the same.
If you don't mind, I'd rather be alone.
I do mind. I'd like to know what it is that induces you to wander down to the docks on such a dark and foggy night.
I come here to think. Well, I'm a writer. Sometimes a writer needs to get away from people and think.
You'd never believe it, would you?
Huh?
The stuff a lot of you chaps write, I mean. A lot of it shows very little thought.
If we're going to have a slanging match, I might start with a few well-chosen words about policemen.
Well, I'm sure you'd be very good at that.
Especially policemen who keep on making like they're in the Secret Service.
Oh, we have to do that sometimes in order to keep up with writers who make like their private eyes out of comic strips.
All right. Shall we call it quits? I'd still like to be alone.
What for?
I told you.
Mr. Chester, you aren't working on any piece of writing. I mean, when would you have had the time these past weeks? You've really been very busy doing something else, haven't you?
So?
How are things at home?
Home?
With you and what? Mrs. Chester.
Why don't you mind your own darn business?
Well, it is my business, in a way. You see, your wife invited me over for a cup of morning tea, yet when I called, she said it was not a good day because she expected to have a very important chat to you that day.
Oh, did she?
Hmm.
I must apologize for not keeping you up to date with all our domestic matters, Inspector.
It didn't work out, did it? The important chat, I mean.
Now listen to me, Charlie.
Which means you would now be free to associate more frequently with, somebody else.
Confound
Yet
you.
Yet here you are, wandering lonely as a cloud, as the poet said.
Oh, go to the devil and take your idle chatter with you.
Ah, but it isn't idle chatter. You see, I'm concerned about that, somebody else.
Somebody else? What's the matter with you? We've been talking about Jan Carter by name before.
Jan Carter? Well, I seem to recall you said you'd never heard of her.
And you accuse me of trying to play games with you. Now, who's playing games now?
Yes, well, you look at it from my point of view. There are times when knowing too much can be an embarrassment to a man in my position.
And just what is your position? That's what I'd like to know.
Oh, what about Jan Carter? That's what I'd like to know.
We can forget about her. I don't know where she is. I'm not likely to be seeing her again in a hurry.
What? Well, I must say I didn't count on that development.
I couldn't care less on what you counted. Now, will you go away and leave me alone?
So you really came down here to... Well, to... be alone with your memories, I'm sorry, Chester, I didn't realize how things were. And I must say, I don't like this very much. I suppose you wouldn't like to tell me where you last saw Jan Carter.
No, I wouldn't.
Well, what difference does it make to you if she's walked out on you?
Look, you can forget about Jan Carter. She's gone where you'll never find her.
What's that?
Look, Inspector, I'm not very bright tonight. Couldn't we leave all
Conway,
this...
Conway, I'll never find her, eh? So that's it. Chester, you infernal
idiot. Take it easy.
Now start walking, Chester, back to my car. You and I are going to have a very serious talk, and this time there'll be no idle chatter, I assure you. Now come on!
Inspector, what do you want with Charlie Tinker? He just happens to be a pawnbroker.
He happens to be a pawnbroker who sent you a message about Jan Carter.
What? How did you know?
I was with your wife and she took it out of the letterbox. It was a bit cryptic, but it mentioned pawning your pistol. And it was you who had told me you knew Charlie Tinker.
Okay, but why would he have anything to do with...
Oh, wake up, Chester. Don't you think that Charlie Tinker is known to the police? Don't you think we know that he has a list of underworld contacts as long as your arm? If Jan Carter wanted to get away into hiding, Charlie's just the man she'd go to.
She didn't know him.
No, but you did. That's enough for me. Ah, at last.
Yeah, what's the idea of banging on my door in the middle?
Hello, Charlie.
Hello, Inspector. Want to pawn something?
I want the answers to some questions. Fast.
The rush of events in the last half hour had left me a little fuddled. Inspector Charlton had always seemed such a chatty, dull-witted fellow. Maybe I should have taken more notice of Charlie's warning about Charlton being a deep one. For once again I was faced with a new menace to the safety of Jan Carter, the girl who was too young to die.
Here's Chris McCabe.
Tips for a good concert. First of all, to me, the ad, the advertisement, whether it be in the newspaper or on the website, must state that this is a first, if there is a first act. Secondly, must start on time. To me, that's just good manners. And I'd like to hear the artist tell us some background, etc., to about every fourth or fifth song. And finally, for me, as I'm getting closer to retiring age, 2 hours to me is value for money. Concerts these days cost a lot of money, of $100 plus, and all those fees that you incur. So those are my four good tips for a concert. Saw Pam Ears in the James Hay Theatre, January 2007. Yes, 2007. Now, Pam is still with us, born on the 14th of March, 1947, so according to my school cert maths, that makes her around 71. Born in Stafford-in-the-Vale, now that's Oxfordshire, I'm none the wiser either, other than it's north of Taupo, or 60 miles west of London, halfway between Swindon and Oxford. Here's our first picking from Pum, Battery Hen.
You. Right then, well, I've got this piece of paper here and I've written down what I thought I'd do. Oh, I am a battery hen. On me back there's not a germ. I never scratched a farmyard and I never pecked a worm. I never had the sunshine to warm me feathers through. Eggs I lay every day for the likes of you. Now, when you has them scrambled and piled up on your plate, it's me what you should thank for that. I never lays them late. I always lays them regular. I always lays them right. I never lays them brown. I always lays them white. But it's no life for a battery hen. In me box I'm sat. A funnel stuck out from the side. Me pellet comes down that. I gets a squirt of water every half a day. Watching with me beady eye me eggs roll away. I lays them in a funnel. Strategically placed so that I don't kick them and let them go to waste. They rolls off down the tubing and up the gangway quick. Sometimes I gets to thinking that could have been a chick. I might have been a farmyard hen scratching in the sun. There might have been a crowd of chicks after me to run. There might have been a cockerel fine to pay us his respects instead of sitting here till someone comes and wrings our necks. I see the time and motion clock is saying nearly noon. I expect me squirt of water will come flying at me soon. And then me spray of pellets will nearly break me leg. And I'll bite the wire netting and lay one more bloody egg. Thank you very much. Oh yes, I've got this interesting anecdote to tell you now. I was in Wantage the other day with my mum shopping, and this man came up to me and he said, "Excuse me asking, but are you the girl I saw on Opportunity Knox?" And I said, "Well, yes." And he said, "Blimey, they done you up for the telly, didn't they?"
You're tuned to Plains FM and we're listening to Pam Ayres. We're going to hear, "Oh, I wish I'd looked after me teeth."
Well, I'm going to do, "Oh, I wish I'd looked after me teeth." "Oh, I wish I'd looked after me teeth and spotted the dangers beneath. Oh, the toffees I chewed and the sweet sticky food. Oh, I wish I'd looked after me teeth. I wish I'd been that much more willing when I had more tooth there than filling to give up gobstoppers from respect to me choppers and to buy something else with me shilling. When I think of the lollies I licked and the licorice all sorts I picked, sherbet dabs, big and little, all that hard peanut brittle, my conscience gets horribly pricked. Well, my mother, she told me no end. If you've got a tooth, you got a friend. I was young then and careless. My toothbrush was airless. I never had much time to spend. Well, I showed him the toothpaste all right. I flashed it about late at night. But up and down brushing and poking and fussing didn't seem worth the time. I could bite. If I'd known I was paving the way to cavities, caps and decay, the murder of fillings, injections and drillings, I'd have thrown all my sherbet away. So I lie in the old dentist chair and I gaze up his nose in despair. And his drill, it do whine in these molars of mine, to amalgam, he'll say, for in there. How I laughed at my mother's false teeth as they foamed in the waters beneath. But now comes the reckoning. It's me they are beckoning. Oh, I wish I'd looked after me teeth.
What about In the Fear of the Butcher?
Now, I'm going to recite this poem. In Fear of the Butcher, it's called. Here it is. There is an art which ladies have, with which I can't compete. And that's the art of knowing how to pick out joints of meat. It must be very nice to know your sirloin from your rump. Or if you get a better bet with brisket than with chump. Oh. You see, me being single, I never have to care. A plate of beans and bangers would keep me from despair. But when I have me friends in, that's when I come unstuck. That's when I brave the butcher and go to try me luck. I stand there in the butcher's queue, me courage screwed and mustered. But when I hear, yes please dear, that's when I get all flustered. That's when I wish I really knew me scrag end from me ock, me belly from me chitlins, and me knees they start to knock. He says, pound a steak, dear. I hates him and he knows it. Or else he'll say, a chicken, here's a fresh one, but we froze it. While all the ladies in the queue are shuffling off their feet, my friends, it is a nightmare when I buy a piece of meat. And every single time I say, I'll have a bit of that, pointing wildly at the window and a great big lump of fat. Oh, all you other ladies, I don't know how you do it, how you acquire what you desire and not a lump of suet. Oh, I'll be a vegetarian or gnawing at an apple. No more with torque of lamb and pork will I have to grapple. And if me friends they visit me, I'll look them in the eye. And if they've come to dinner, well, I'll tell them goodbye.
Experiences with the parrots. Now, that's a bit risque, so you may need to keep it from little children or old people.
I was going to do the parrot next. I thought that's what I'd do. Oh, yeah. At the Cotswold Wildlife Park in the merry month of May, I paid the man the money and went in to spend the day. Straightway to the pet's corner, I turned my eager feet to go and see the rabbits and give them something to eat. As I approached the etches, I was alarmed to see a gang of little yobbos hollering with glee. I crept up quiet behind them and weighed the scene up quick and saw them poke the rabbits, poke them with a stick. Get off, you little buggers. I shouted in their ear, don't you poke them rabbits. That's not why they are here. I must have really scared them. In seconds, they had gone, and feeling I had done some good, I carried on along, till, up beside the parrot's cage, I stood to view the scene. They was lovely parrots, beautiful blue and green. In and out the nest box, they was really having fun, squawking out and flying about. All except for one. One poor old puffed up parrot clung grimly to his perch, and as the wind blew frontwards, backwards he would lurch. One foot up in his feathers, abandoned by the rest, he sat there plainly dying, his head upon his chest. Well, I walked on down the pathway and I stroked a nanny goat. But the thought of parrots dying brought a lump into me throat. I could no longer stand it, and to the office I fled. Politely I began, excuse me, your parrot's nearly dead. Well, me and a curator, in urgent leaps and bounds, with a bottle of parrot cure, dashed across the grounds. The dust flew up around us as we reached the parrot's pen. And the curator, he turned to me, saying, which one is it then? You know what I am going to say. He was not there at all. At least, not where I left him. No, he flipped from wall to wall. As brightly as a button, he'd squawk and jump and leap. The curator was very kind, saying, I expect he was asleep, but I was humiliated. As I stood before the wire, the curator went back to put his feet up by the fire. So I let the parrot settle, and after a short search, I found the stick the yobbos had and poked him off his perch.
And finally, this On Plains FM, we'll hear from Pam Ayres, "Oh no, I've got a cold."
I am sitting on the sofa by the fire and staying in. Me head is free of comfort and me nose is free of skin. Me friends have run for cover. They have left me pale and sick, with me pockets full of tissues and me nostrils full of Vic. That bloke in the telly adverts, he's supposed to have a cold. He has a swig of whatnot, and he drops off good as gold. His face like snow in harvest, slips into sweet repose. Well, I bet this tortured breathing never whistled down his nose. I burnt me bit of dinner, cos I've lost me sense of smell. But then I couldn't taste it, so that worked out very well. I'd buy some down the cafe, but I know that at the till, a voice from work will softly say, "I thought that you were ill." So I'm wrapped up in a blanket with me feet upon a stool. I've watched the telly programmes and the kids come home from school. But what I haven't watched for is any sympathy, cos all you ever get's, "Oh no, you keep away from me." Medicinal discovery, it moves in mighty leaps. It leapt straight past the common cold and gave it us for keeps. No, I'm not a fussy woman. There's no malice in me eye. But I wish that they could cure the common cold. That's all. Goodbye.
Thank you, Chris. And next month, Chris McCabe will introduce the Beach Boys. Groucho Marx came out of retirement for a 1972 Carnegie Hall appearance and was awarded a special Emmy in 1975 for his hosting of You Bet Your Life, which he did on NBC between 1950 and 1961. Hello to John Newman of Burnside, Blair Smith in Brindwa, Jim Smart in Papanui, Bob Gant at Church Corner, and Lorna and Wilf Metzger in Lindwood. For you all, here's Game Show Groucho.
And now we bring you that genial, jovial, affable, laughable custodian of the questions, that ever-cheerful dispenser of brand new silver dollars, Dr. Groucho Marx.
Thank you, thank you. I'm happy to be here again this week as your quizmaster. I say I'm happy to be here. I'd much rather be home in my backyard with a tall, cool beer and a short, warm housemaid.
I wrote that myself.
Now let's get on with the show. Better yet, let's get on with the housemaid. And remember, this program... Boys, boys. And remember, this program is presented by the makers of Sludge, the breakfast food that makes you wish it was lunchtime. Unlike other breakfast foods, Sludge doesn't crackle, snap, crunch, or pop. It tinkles. No other cereal can make this statement. Personally, I'm just as happy. Who wants a cereal that makes statements? How'd you like to sit down for a quiet breakfast some morning and have a plate of oatmeal say, "Hello, Harry, how'd you sleep last night? When are you going to pay the rent?" I like an oatmeal that keeps its lump shut. If it wants to talk, let it talk to other oatmeal. I like an oatmeal that's kind, not one that's gruel.
I've been growing tobacco for nigh on to 30 years. I've seen many a crop of that fine, rich, sun-ripened leaf come and go. And the folks up north know tobacco goodness.
Mm-hmm. If I may make a suggestion, I wish you'd get the LSMFT out of here. But before you go, take five silver dollars.
Thank you, sir.
That's all right. I'm taking 50. The sponsor will never miss it. And I'll never miss you. Let's see now. Who's our next contestant? Ah, here he is. What's your name, sir?
I've been growing tobacco for nigh on to 30 years.
Hey, isn't that stuff up yet? Look, this is a quiz program. Are you a contestant or aren't you?
The whole secret of real tobacco goodness is in the fertilizer.
It is, huh?
You gotta know just how to spread it around.
Well, you're the man for the job, and thank you, Sam Nicotine. This is some quiz program. I've been here 20 minutes, and I haven't asked anybody a question yet. Oh, well, I'll take a few more silver dollars. After all, it's only stealing. Ah, here's the next contestant. Good evening, sir.
My name is Richard Lane. I live at 748 and Quarter Clinton Avenue, Culver City, California. The campus is a little white house, green shutters, picket fence, red brick chimney. All you have to do is to turn to the right when you come to the gas near the corner of Melrose. Keep your only hit Clinton. Turn to the left is the fourth house and right if it comes from Beverly. I'm a grocery clerk. Now, what's the first question?
Well, I
was... a couple of these questions. A couple of these programs, you quiz masters are all alike. You never stop talking blah, blah, blah. Fella, come up and answer a few questions, pick up a lot of what happened? You ask him, what's his name? What does he do? Is he married, engaged, going with anybody? What his hobbies are? By the time his question comes up, it's either too late to answer. There's no money left. What's the first question?
Well, I was...
There you go, jabbing again. Don't you guys do anything but talk, blah, blah, blah? Suppose you're going to ask me where I'm from. They always do. And usually the guy says Brooklyn. The minute he says Brooklyn, yeah, hooray! Hey, yeah, hey! You think everyone's born there on purpose. Me, I'm from Toledo. When I say Toledo, does the audience applaud, stamp, scream, whistle, and hit each other over the head with chairs? Nah. They just say Toledo. Brooklyn? Yeah! Hey! Toledo? All right, what's the first question?
When you were a baby, did your mother ever drop you on your tongue?
I can see I'm not going to get anywhere with you, so for $75, Mount Vernon, Marie Antoinette in 1865.
I don't get her. What's that?
That's three questions. Put any questions you like to. Now, give me the money. Good night.
And now, once again, we bring you the genial, jovial, affable dispenser of the brand-new silver dollars, but very little dialogue for the last few minutes, Groucho Marx! Applause. For those of you who are lucky enough to tune in late, let me remind you that this program comes to you through the carelessness of Sludge, the breakfast food that tinkles. For 6 years now, Sludge has been put to every known scientific test, and the only good thing they found out about it is that it doesn't leak in a plane. There's nothing like it for a quick breakfast. You just got to know how to spread it around.
I've been growing tobacco for nigh on to 30 years, and this is the Armed Forces Radio Service.
Just before we go, this is a second TV theme, the 1-2 MacGyver. The program was a great favorite of my late mother's.
Thank you.
Once again, we're off, Steve Price and Paul F., and we'll be back for our second program for November in a week. We'll be in the company then of the four preps, Groucho Marx and Sandy Powell, who will be all at sea. Take care, won't you? And may life be looking up for you. Goodbye. Out of the Glow is an Ear Media presentation recorded at WebMad Christchurch.